Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back. We are on episode number
79.
Yeah, baby. All right. Thank you so much for joining us. We are on chapter 10, text number 10.
And this is an exciting day because you know what? I right before we filmed, I knew that these were important texts because Srila Prabhupada discusses it. We're going to get there all in one of the purports. He said, okay, and now Arjuna has heard the four essential, most important verses. And I thought, wait, is this? And I went back, scroll. And we realized we're talking about the Chatur Shlokis.
So the what?
The what? Say no, no. Chatur Shloka is a Sanskrit term that basically talks about the four most important verses from a scripture. So in this case, usually it's the Bhagavad Gita. And basically, this captures the essence, the whole philosophical core of what is bhakti yoga, right?
You might be thinking to yourself, what? We already started. Where's the summary? Where's everything? But there's a reason for this. It's because the last two texts that we read, 8 and 9, correct?
Exactly.
Were part of the Chatur
Shloka.
Shlokas.
So, yeah, chatur comes from the four, like the derivative of the word four.
Oh, thank
you. Look at you.
Well, I know a little bit.
Scholar,
I mean, it's a little Sanskrit, a little Hindi. So, Ekdotin chad. Chad means four. And so that is the... I'm just Indian, guys.
You're like, wow.
So, yeah, chatur, it comes from the word root word char.
Amazing. Four. So, right. So we're starting off the episode right into it because... Shyamali caught something really special, which is the four most special, important verses of the whole Bhagavad Gita were the last two we read and the next two that we're about to read.
Wait, the four of the four most important of this chapter or this entire book?
The whole Bhagavad Gita.
What?
Yes. Ladies, we're on the brink of a big freaking deal.
It's so cool.
I've always wanted.
You know, there's a list of all the most important like shlokas that one should know from the Bhagavad Gita. And it's a list of like different, a shloka means verses like the Sanskrit the Tasham Shtata Yuktam,
sorry, what was it?
I was just reading the one in front of me.
That was really cute.
But you know, we read the English translations usually, but the shloka is just like the Sanskrit words. There's like a whole list of them and they're like probably like 20 of them that it's good to memorize and to know because they're like the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. But here we're talking about four.
Four, exactly.
If all you know is these four, you're doing great.
And they call them the Chatur Shlokis because they say it becomes evident that it's the essential theme of bhakti yoga. Because what is bhakti yoga? It's the yoga that centers on a loving relationship between devotees and Krishna. And relationships are defined by loving reciprocation between two people involved. So there's a giving and a receiving, you know, on both ends. So then basically, as I was doing a little research, it was so sweet to see that these four nutshell verses define the loving reciprocation essentially between Krishna and his devotees. And the verses naturally lend themselves to an analysis. The progression and the division of the verses lend itself to see what it even means, the definition of love in our relationship with Krishna. And I loved it also. One last important thing is the first two verses of 8 and 9 are what devotees do for Krishna. And the last two verses describe what Krishna does for the devotees. But it's interesting, and we'll get there. In the middle, there's also a merge between how they intersect. So how Krishna and the devotees relate to each other.
Mm.
So it's a beautiful, just natural blending of relationships.
Yeah.
So let's talk about love, ladies.
But you know what's so interesting is that the last episode, we actually started.
Right.
We started the most important four verses. So it's chapter 10, text 8.
Exactly.
Should we want to read it?
Yes, let's read it.
All right, go ahead, Priya.
I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who perfectly know this engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts.
Mic drop.
Beautiful.
Okay. So Krishna. That was the first most important
Krishna
one.
Speaking,
so that, if those words went over your head, essentially that's step one in what the devotees can do for Krishna. We can A, cultivate knowledge, and B, practice wholehearted devotion. That's the point of this verse.
Love it.
Knowledge, devotion.
All right. Text number nine.
Or Shama Sangeeta?
The thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me. Their lives are fully devoted to my service, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss from always enlightening one another and conversing about me.
Oh, beautiful. Yes, we do. Yes,
I remember this. I remember this from the last episode. Yeah.
So essentially offer our entire being, body, mind, and words as well to Krishna. And I remember we got so excited in this one because we thought, oh my God, Krishna's always thinking about us. Thoughts of us always dwell within him. And when we read this, if you don't know what we're talking about, go back to when we did text 9. It was very sweet. We were all like, oh my God.
Yeah. Cause it is really fun talking about Krishna and talking about Krishna's pastimes. And so it's always just, it's just a good dang time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this verse is like the epitome of this podcast.
Exactly.
Like we're just having a good dang time talking about Krishna.
Yeah.
So, that basically are the two verses of what the devotees can do for Krishna. And now in 10:10, we're about to tackle the third of the Chaturshlokis, which is what Krishna can do for us, his devotees, in return. So, do we want to do the invocation prayers?
Yes.
Om Ajnana Timirandhya.
Can we try that again?
Rewind.
Take a deep breath.
All right.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances onto them. Mm-mm. All right. So we are on the third most important verse in the entire Gita.
And now, as I think Priya will start reading it, the two sets of verses, the ones we just recapped and the two we're about to do, they're linked, as I mentioned, through the first half of 10:10, which is about to describe how devotees engage with Krishna. And then it'll continue with how Krishna engages with us.
Beautiful.
Love it.
All right. Chapter 10, text number 9.
10.
10.
Text number 10. Sorry. Text number 10. 10:10. Good, Priya.
Those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them understanding by which they can come to me.
Oh, I love that. One more time.
Those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me.
Mm. So there is a back and forth, right? So if we approach him with love, that's like the key ingredient, then the main point of this, he'll provide the knowledge to help choose wisely and attain him. As we navigate life, he's going to help us realize him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if we spend our entire life learning about Krishna and showing that loving devotion to him, he gives us an invite to his house. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
House in Goloka Vrindavan, we finally get that invite. He gives us the address so that we understand how to get back to him.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's beautiful because it shows that this relationship with Krishna is not just a ritualistic, worshipful relationship. It's one of deep love and intimacy.
Yeah. There's a lot from this text that I actually really liked and I want to bring up, but I also know that we're talking about this text as a main verse of the Bhagavad Gita as a whole.
Yeah.
So which way do you guys want to do it first? Do you want to talk about it being one of four or do we want to address the purport?
I think let's talk, because we're in the mood of one of four right now, let's talk about how this fits into the four most important and then we can go into the purport.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's really nice to see that the reciprocation here is personal in the sense that we already have a loving bond with Krishna. It's not that we have to go find something that doesn't exist already within us, you know? Our goal is to uncover it. And then the second half of this text is essentially saying that then if we try to uncover it with love, Krishna will reciprocate compassionately by giving us whatever we need to come closer to him. So here in this case, he's going to provide us the knowledge. So it definitely comes from him.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? Sometimes when Krishna says, give the understanding by which they can come to me, the understanding can be a hard event in your life. You know, it doesn't have to be all hunky-dory. I love Krishna and Krishna loves me. Then I'm going to go home to Krishna. You know, sometimes it is Krishna's mercy for us to go through something hard.
Right.
That he actually is doing that purposefully to give us that understanding.
Right. Yeah.
Sometimes it can also be intuition or that gut feeling that some people have. Some people are I need to just be part of a spiritual community. Some people really are like that. And then we've mentioned brahmacharis. I've heard people say I just want to experience what that life is of being a brahmachari or I mean, I guess you could call it kind of like a monk, but not quite. And they just live that life, and like it's Krishna kind of sending a message through their bodies.
They're
through
Paramatma,
like,
yeah. You know? The Krishna inside them that gives them that voice that says, okay, go do this now.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes, it's like sometimes I say that if you crave something, and I'm not saying all cravings, but if you crave something, it's because your body actually needs it. So like if you're craving, I know it's going to sound silly.
Wait, what are you going to say?
But I was going to say like broccoli. It might be because of the whatever vitamins or nutrients broccoli has that your body needs.
I'm sorry. Do you have cravings for broccoli?
I might.
Oh, gross. We can't be friends
anymore. Sorry. It just tastes so good. Just picture this, okay? You just like steam it and then you put ghee and then salt and pepper. Oh,
Priya's like, it tastes so good. Said wow. Nobody ever. Said nobody ever.
You got very healthy cravings.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you're saying that Krishna has given you that craving.
Yeah, Krishna gives you cravings that get you closer to him, right? So he'll be like, hey, like, maybe you're feeling a little lost and you're like, I should look into further, like, who am I? What is my purpose? And then that question leads you to getting closer to a friend who's into some spirituality or going to a temple or whatever it might be. Like Krishna speaks through your heart. Krishna speaks through events in your life. Krishna speaks to people in your life. Like there's so many ways in which Krishna like kind of sends you the understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But like doesn't your point kind of connect to my point in a way that like, if things are going great in your life, you don't have those cravings for something deeper usually. It's often brought upon, like about in your life through unsettling events or things that have been hard and then you're looking for answers.
Yeah, I gotta say, I think that's most people, right? And I'm saying that, and most people at different stages of their lives, I think I'm like a little bit of an oddball where like, I just...
A knotball?
Oddball.
Oddball.
I can't say it very well. Anyways, because I think for me, like my initial attraction to Krishna was just I enjoyed Krishna consciousness so much. Mm. There wasn't necessarily like... I didn't read the Gita because I was lost. Like I read the Gita because I was just curious.
Right.
Or I didn't, you know, do service because whatever. I just was interested. Like that's just aligned with me so far. But now that I'm older, I've definitely gone to the Gita and be like, what do I do with my life? You know, so there's definitely both. I just wanted to say there's a small percentage of people that maybe are just curious and seek through different.
Fair. I think for me, it was just like, I started when I was in college, when I was having a crisis as to what am I supposed to do with my life here, right? Mm. And then, you know, things get good and then you go through breakups, I start to read the Gita. You go through hard times with your family, I start to read the Gita, you know? And like, I think that is Krishna giving that understanding because he knows where my heart is. But sometimes he just puts that a little bit, just a little thorn in my foot to be like, okay, you gotta come back to the Gita.
Yeah. He's like, don't forget me.
You know, what you're describing, Shama, reminds me of something my mom said the other day. She was saying she never has gone fishing. She doesn't like it as a concept. And from very young, she never liked meat and all that. But with the concept of fishing, like you throw the line.
Rod.
I don't fish either, clearly. But you throw the thingamabobber.
Yeah. That's
and
it.
You kind of reel it in, but then you have to let it go so the line doesn't break. You reel it in, then you let it go so the line doesn't break. And she was saying, oftentimes, and similar to what you're describing in your life, Krishna pops into your life, but you're not ready yet. So, okay. Then he pops back into your life. Mm. So looking back, you can connect all the dots or the breadcrumbs. And then he pops back in. And then finally, when you're really ready, boom, it's just like the light bulb goes off. Mm. And then you can fully reel it in, bring it back home, you know?
Krishna's giving that understanding.
Right. And I love that because no matter what, and the Gita, even we talked about the four different ways people approach Krishna consciousness, right? So Priya, maybe for you is one thing, for you is another. Everyone goes through it in different ways. But it just is such a feeling of relief when you think, no matter whether it's seemingly good or seemingly bad, everything is so specifically tailored for me to make the most progress, right? Mm. And it made me think the other day, my mom was like, you know, as parents often worry about their children, my mom was talking to me about my sister and like, oh, you hope, or I hope it this and that work out for her. I want her to be happy, my baby, you know? And I was like, Ma, and sometimes we need to remind, she reminds me in my own things all the time. So it's easier to give a reminder when it's not you worrying. So I told her, whether this situation works out for my sister Vrinda or not, it's going to be so that she's going to grow the most. So if it doesn't work out, yeah, it'll be sad, but she's strong and she's going to grow in a way and develop a tap into a strength that she needs to. And Krishna totally knows. And my mom's like, you're so right, mi gordita. Because she reminds me that in my own stuff that I stress about all the time. So whether, you know, we always say good, bad, who's to say.
Yep.
So it just made me think of that, Shama, when you were saying in times of stress, you return to this. And it's so nice to think Krishna is curating specifically and perfectly our lives.
That's so real. And I think one of the most important words in this verse is the use of the word love. So Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. And I think that's so important because as devotees, and I've seen this like time and time again, I think people get so wrapped up in the rituals and the hierarchy and like following the rules and regulations that they forget that Krishna, like mostly Krishna cares about the love, serving him with love, I think he cares less about the rules and the regulations. I think he cares so much about the intention that's in your heart.
Absolutely.
Which we can't forget.
Sometimes people flip the steps for the goal, and the rules and regulations are not the end goal. Sure, they're there for a reason to try to, we can give an explanation to everything and how it's supposed to lead us to a feeling. The feeling is the ultimate end goal. So yes, it's nice to follow as much as we can, but the end goal is love. So if someone replaces that end goal and thinks like they get just so consumed in the rules and the regulations, and then there's also a certain attachment that develops there, like, I'm so good. I follow all the rules and regulations. Yeah. You get a little puffed up. So it's like being attentive to not be attached to the identifications we can hold on to of like, I am so great. Yeah. I follow all the rules.
Yeah.
But rather like, you know, sometimes when you're stumbling along the path, it does cultivate a little humility. And there we rely on Krishna. And that's when Krishna helps us out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like think about how many times in this entire book, Krishna himself talks about love, talks about devotion, talks about intention, right? He's not always talking about, oh, make sure you follow the rules and regulations and he like pushes his glasses up, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
But if that's what he cares about, then we need to understand the essence of what that actually means.
Oh, I was just going to say, Prabhupada says here something that made me really smile earlier when I was reading it.
She got all warm and fuzzy before we recorded. And we were like, what's up, Priya? We were like, no, tell us during the show.
Save it for the podcast.
I think it was this part. It might be a slight, but anyways, Prabhupada says, a person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization. But if he's still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. And then he adds, that person should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love.
That's the most important thing.
And that's so beautiful.
I think what that to me was a very practical thing to say for Prabhupada, because I think a lot of people, I mean, I've heard of people having a spiritual master since the age of like 10, right? Or I mean, even some that are later, it doesn't matter what age you are, or that people are like, I am a Hare Krishna, I am a devotee, and the struggles are still there, right? Yeah. Or we might understand the philosophy and still struggle to like actually commit to it every day consistently as the best that we can. Some days we don't, right? And so Krishna basically saying like, I understand, Prabhupada saying this, I understand you might have a guru, you might be very devoted, like you do a lot of service, you do a lot of things. There might still not be the capacity to be the perfect devotee, and Krishna will inspire you anyways, right? Krishna will send you the guidance that you need to get to the place, even if, you know, you're trying, as long as you're trying and as long as you're doing it with love.
No one gets left behind. That's real.
And Priya, I love that point. And it reminds me of something my dad said the other day. He was saying, along the concept of celebrate your successes and over the failures, because he was saying, you know, in this philosophy, we read of the highest standards, these great devotees and saints who can perform incredible things. So if you compare yourself after so many years, you might think, man, what am I doing? Where does that leave me? You know?
Woof. Yeah.
And he said, so that's why he said, celebrate the times that you're able to do it and the times that you do put your best foot forward, and don't fall into lamentation because that's darkness. So always hold on to the light. And when you get down and lament, that's darkness. And we don't want to go there.
And I think it's, even if it's small things, okay? Like even if it's a Kadashi and you like everyone was ordering rice around you and you didn't order rice. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's huge.
Like, if that's like, huge. I know, but like it might seem like a small thing to you, but I think it's a big deal to Krishna, you know?
Yeah.
Even if like you the fridge is empty and all you have is a jar of peanut butter and some apples and you're like, okay, I'm going to offer this to Krishna on Ekadashi. And yeah. to you, it might be like, oh my God, this is so little. But like, if as long as the love is there, I think Krishna mm-hmm. might think it's the biggest thing in the world.
Yeah. And if you're struggling in whatever capacity you might be, I'm going to give you some advice that Abhijit, the producer, and my husband gave to me. Anything is better than zero.
Oh, yeah.
And that's important for perfectionistic people, right? Yeah. Like, if I'm not going to do this, might as well not do it at all.
Right. I've heard that. Know? I've been that. I've seen that. It's very common to be like, well, I can't chant my japa attentively. I'm just not going to chant. And it's just like, anything is better than zero. And like when we're in a struggling position, just remember that because it's simple. Anything's better than zero.
That's so good.
Yeah.
It's true. It's like this, it's not Michael Scott. It's actually Wayne Gretzky that's this. It's like you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So just take a shot at Krishna in a devotional way.
I love it. Who are we talking about? Michael Scott is from The Office. Yeah?
Michael Scott is from The Office, but then he has this joke where he takes a Wayne Gretzky quote, but that's an actual, like Wayne Gretzky was one of the greatest hockey players of all time. And it's true. You miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Yeah,
so right. even if it's a little thing that you can do for Krishna, take the shot.
Yes.
Right, right.
Mm. And at the end of the day, it's also for you.
Yeah.
But that's sometimes ours. So let's do it for Krishna.
Let's do it for Krishna. Let's do it for Krishna.
Right. And it's nice because this gives us a very clear-cut goal. Like Prabhupada says in the purport, the ultimate goal of progression is Krishna. Bam. And when we know the goal, when the goal has been assigned, then okay, the path might be slow and progressively we'll traverse it. We'll try to trudge through it, but the ultimate goal will be achieved. And how many times if we don't have this path, what's our end goal? Mm-hmm. Like many, like what did Prabhupada used to say? Philosophy without religion is just kind of like
mental speculation.
Mental speculation. You go in circles. You have no from point A to point B. What's our end point? You know, you're just philosophizing for the sake of philosophizing. And he said the inverse, like religion without philosophy is sentimentalism or something like that.
Yep.
Right. So it's beautiful because here he's saying, okay, we know our end goal. It's Krishna. It's okay if the progress is slow. We'll get there, but we know what we're working towards.
Yeah. So. There's another part I really like about this text. They started the text talking about Bodhi Yoga. It says Bodhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. Mm. And it says Bodhi means intelligence and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation.
Right.
And when I was reading that, I was kind of like, oh, come on, Prabhupada. Why do we need another way to say like action in Krishna consciousness? Right. Don't we already have
three other ways?
Right? And then I kept reading. And so this is a really cool distinction that I really like. It says, when a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga.
Oof.
Right? Mm. So you know Krishna.
And we talked about karma yoga ages ago.
Yeah. So you know Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You understand that you're supposed to, you know, do devotional service and like, you know, learn more about him and like all of these things, right? Mm. You understand all of that. You understand the goal of life.
Right.
But you are addicted to the fruits of activities. Fruit of activity. Yes, I read that right. Whoa. So that means like, what are some examples, Shamali, of being addicted to the fruits of activities?
Let's say I'm a big businessman and I am really attached to like, I'm making the big bucks. I'm attached to the fruits
promotions,
of my activities, right?
Yes. Shama.
Yeah. I was just going to say attached to the promotion, attached to the money, everything that I do at work, I should be rewarded for it. And I'm attached to that.
Yeah. It could also be, that's good. Anyways, so that's karma yoga. And I thought that was really interesting because what it's saying is it's understanding, but still being stuck, right? Still being stuck in that addiction.
So what would you say then? And you can continue, but pause. That sounds very similar to Bodhi Yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. Karma Yoga is also action in Krishna consciousness.
Right.
So what's the difference then, right? Because there is a difference. And I love that you're bringing up this one section.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it'll get there because it actually outlines the different yogas again in this context.
You can bring it back up if it doesn't.
Okay. So continue.
Yes. So then Prabhupada goes on to say, when one knows the goal is Krishna, but he or she takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna, they are acting in jnana yoga.
Right, because jnana is knowledge.
Jnana is knowledge, but when you're using it as mental speculation, meaning, well, I think Krishna would want me to eat this ice cream or whatever. I think Krishna would want me to, you know, like when we're making it up as we go, that
whimsically.
Whimsically, a little bit too loosey-goosey.
Which is why, in some ways, the rules and regulations are very helpful, right? To understand the path. Because when we start making our own rules and regulations, and we're deviating from Krishna's message.
That's a good point. And I want to emphasize that again, what you just said. Because if we're going to create a movement that's going to attract hundreds of thousands of people all over the world, you kind of do need to have some rules and regulations, because if not, anything goes. So we can all just start speaking for Krishna and embellishing in ways that
we are all Krishna. All of a sudden it diverts completely.
Exactly. Yeah. And the truth gets watered down. So even though we know that rules and regulations aren't the end goal, that's why it's a fine tightrope to walk. We know the sentiment's the end goal, but what you said is just so important. We need to stay true to what's the core of the philosophy.
Which is why we've talked about the parampara, or like how we try to only speak the words that Prabhupada says and not add our own speculation, right? Because that's the problem. We don't want to water down this wonderful philosophy. We want to keep it as intact as possible. So mental speculation, even though you understand Krishna consciousness, is acting in jnana yoga.
Okay.
Now, the next one. When they know, and this is any of us, when any of us know the goal and seek Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, that means that we are acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga.
That's the topmost. That's what we're striving for.
So from my understanding, and you can continue then, even though at the top it says buddhi yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness, and then it also goes on to say karma yoga is action in Krishna consciousness.
It's different.
It sounds like buddhi yoga is when it's done right, in a way. You know, karma yoga, it's all like a stepping stone. Like, okay, you're acting in the world. You're trying to figure it out. You're still not totally ready to drop everything, but at least you're trying to offer the results up to Krishna, but you're still kind of a little addicted to the fruits of the action.
Yeah, if you look at the Sanskrit, the buddhi yogam, like what Krishna actually says, what that directly translates to, is real intelligence.
Real intelligence. Yeah. Right. So that's when you're truly operating on a level of bhakti yoga.
Yeah. And I think also karma yoga, we're talking about karma as action. So the difference is when we're talking about action in Krishna consciousness in terms of buddhi yoga, we're talking about like you behaving in a Krishna conscious way.
Right.
Like you actively behaving in a Krishna conscious way.
And that's buddhi yoga.
That's buddhi yoga.
Right.
But karma yoga, it's karma is the action, the word of like accruing karma, right?
Right.
Doing and karma is the direct translation to action. So that's different kind of action that we're speaking of. Action in terms of credits you're collecting versus action of doing work.
Right.
But work in Krishna consciousness. It's a little
Right. So to me, it's kind of like in chapter, I think it was 2, or if I'm not mistaken, was all about karma yoga. And we talked about how to spiritualize your regular job in the real world with your consciousness. That's karma yoga versus buddhi yoga or bhakti yoga is when you're acting in Krishna consciousness, but truly you're just doing it in devotional service. Yes. In your internal consciousness and your external actions are also just directly linked.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So yeah, I thought that was really cool because I always thought, oh my gosh, all these different definitions are hard to come. And I think Prabhupada did a great job of breaking it down for us to understand it more clearly.
I love it.
Yep.
Anything okay, else, beautiful. No. Text 10.
All right.
Nice,
text 11, which is the final of the most important four verses.
Chatur Slokis.
Yes.
Very nice. All right. Shama Sangita.
All right. Chapter 10, text number 11. Krishna says, to show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance.
Beautiful. Do you want to read that one more time?
Yeah. To show them special mercy, I, Krishna, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance.
So when we look at them hand in hand, because text 10 and now this, what she just read, text 11, they are what Krishna does for us, for his devotees. In text 10, he provides knowledge to help us choose wisely and attain him. And text 11 is he dissipates the darkness of ignorance with the torchlight of knowledge. Mm. So they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Because in one hand, we had knowledge, but we needed sort of like
Right.
a little push because we understand Krishna consciousness, but we might be stuck for whatever reason.
Exactly.
And in this one, he's saying, and if you don't have the knowledge, I will destroy ignorance so that you can have the knowledge.
Right. Yeah. And this ties back to the invocation prayers we say all the time, right? With the torchlight of knowledge, the spiritual master will show the way through darkness. Mm-hmm. And that's beautiful because he's acting then as this is the intersection with, he's acting as the representative of Krishna. Because in this verse, he's saying that's what Krishna does. So when we surrender to a spiritual master, he's acting on behalf of Krishna with the torchlight of knowledge. Mm. That's beautiful.
Okay, so these two verses, what do we get? What do we get from Krishna again? Okay, so we love him. We get A, the understanding to come to him.
Right. He provides us the knowledge to choose wisely and attain him.
Yeah.
Right.
So A, gives us the understanding. And then B, destroys our ignorance within our heart. So that
Exactly.
Okay. Cool.
And text 10 also was the intersection of the reciprocation, because what does he crave from us? Simple. Our love, our affection. So if we give him our love, he will do this for us. And that's beautiful, because it really is. You said it once, Shama, like you can't, I was saying you can't have a relationship without two people. And you're like, yeah, like clapping with one hand. What does it sound like?
We're all just trying to clap with one hand right now.
Exactly. So between these four verses of the Chaturshloki, I love how the most important verses of the Gita all have to do with love and relationship and reciprocation. Because you know what? How easy, ladies, is it to feel so enlightened and so holier than thou when you isolate yourself and you're on your own and you have no one provoking you, right?
Yeah.
I'm the best.
I think so myself.
They say that we are challenged and grow the most when we are in relationship with others, or just around others, because they challenge who we are.
Right.
Priya, wow. I'm in therapy because of Priya.
That sounds terrible.
No, she didn't do anything bad. But in our friendship, she has challenged me so that I have to go deeper.
Wow. That needed to be said today in the podcast.
It was on my mind.
And you know, I love this one commentator within Bhakti Yoga, within ISKCON, wrote a one-sentence summary of the four Chaturshlokis. They said, the Chaturshloki Gita reflects the reciprocal dynamism of Bhakti Yoga, describing how devotees lovingly offer everything to Krishna and how Krishna then provides them everything they need for their journey towards purification and liberation.
Ooh.
Can you say that again?
Yeah. So the Chaturshloki Gita reflects the reciprocal dynamism of Bhakti Yoga, describing how devotees lovingly offer their everything to Krishna. So that was text 8 and 9. And then in turn, how Krishna provides them everything they need for their journey towards purification and liberation.
Isn't that the best type of love? Reciprocal love?
That's what it really is. Yeah, because how heartbreaking is it when you, like, what would be the opposite of reciprocal love? You one-sided, you pour your heart to someone, infatuation, obsession, and they don't love you back.
Mm-hmm. What is that called? This like unrequited?
Unrequited love.
Yeah. Krishna's like, none of that here. None of that here.
Right.
He gives us the understanding. He gives us his address. He gives us the Google Maps.
Right.
Come right here.
He gives us the pin.
All you have to do is make it here.
That's right.
I give you all the information. Now you have to choose.
I've given you the pin to get back to Goloka Vrindavan. Mm. You just need to follow it, okay?
Yeah.
And I give you the understanding.
And along the way, there's like people with like signs. You know those people that dance with the signs and they're like, no, come, there's free pizza.
Little Caesar's pizza.
And then just like random people, come here, your best friend is here. It's not actually Krishna.
And then there's just a bunch of people with trench coats and they have like watches and stuff. Like, and
shiny, fun objects.
They're trying to distract you, right? There's going to be so many distractions on the way to Goloka Vrindavan. If that's where we're truly headed. Oh my God, so many distractions.
Yeah.
But if we focus, we follow the pin that Krishna dropped in the chat, then we'll be okay.
And you know what's a crazy thing? That you might think that you want to just close your eyes and keep driving, but you can't do that because then you'll crash. It has to be a conscious choice. Like, you have to see all the distractions.
That's a good metaphor.
Yeah. And you have to be like, oh, these distractions exist, but they're not really what I'm looking for, so I got to keep going straight.
And there it comes into play, and I love that analogy. Don't get too hard on yourself. If you accidentally take a detour and you find yourself back, maybe, you know what, that'll make you more solid than in your choice to commit even further. Because you know what, I've tasted it. Not for me, that distraction. Let me keep going.
Just like when we're driving, you know what happens sometimes?
Oh, I get
sometimes?
Lost all the time. I'm the worst directional driver.
We know.
Now you're not getting out of here.
But here's the thing. Like, pretend all of us, the three of us and everyone who listens to this podcast is in a giant WhatsApp chat. Okay. Sure. All right. We're really trying to get back to Krishna. That is our goal of our life, right?
What is the WhatsApp chat?
We're all in a chat. We're in a chat. Just follow along. Okay. All three of us and everyone who listens to this podcast, we're all in this giant WhatsApp group chat. Okay. Krishna knows our intention. We're trying to get back to him. We're reading this giant book. There's so many verses to this, right? We chose to read this book out of the goodness of our hearts, trying to get back to Krishna, right? Mm-hmm. He knows that. Krishna knows that. Krishna knows that every single one of our followers has the intention of finding out more about him and even maybe falling in love with him, right? Fair? Mm-hmm. He drops his address.
That's where that chat was.
He drops
So that's why we needed the WhatsApp chat.
I needed a place to collect information.
I like it. It's so cool because...
Hold on. Continuing. I'm still going.
And what else did he send in the WhatsApp chat?
And then there's hackers that get into this chat, distract you with a whole bunch of stuff.
Wait, before you go to the hackers, can I say one line?
Go crazy.
He drops the pin, but says one word, or one phrase. He said, everything emanates from me, which is the beginning line of the chatur slogan.
Yes.
So pin, everything emanates from me.
And then does he leave the chat?
No,
he's still in the chat.
Yeah, he's always there in our hearts.
Oh my God, that's true. He's always in the chat.
Yeah. But he doesn't respond. You see the blue checks, like he's read
it. He's reading everything.
But he's reading everything, but we have to trust that he's going to respond at some point.
He'll respond eventually.
He sends us messages. That's what the verses were saying, guys.
Oh, duh. Yeah, he sends messages inside of us, not in the chat.
This analogy has gotten out of control.
No, but it's true though, right? If we're all in this modern yoga group chat, Krishna drops the pin. He says, come to Goloka Vrindavan. And I think if we truly serve with love, we'll find our path there. We just got to watch out for the
And I was just going to say, I was driving the other day. I had you in the car. I had somebody else in the car. And I was so distracted by the conversation that I got lost a little bit.
Okay, Priya got lost like four times.
No, I did not. Yeah, I did
actually
not.
Four times. She had to spin. You got lost like four times.
I did not. She's exaggerating. She was in the backseat. She doesn't even know. Anyways, the point is that when this happens to any of us, we might feel a little bit of like a, but then we just get back on the highway and then we go back to where we need to go. So if you deviate for a little bit, just think it's okay. I mean, it's a little annoying, but you're still going. It's still going to be fine. Like it's not the end of the world, even though it might feel like in that moment, oh my God, I have added 5, 10, 15 minutes to my drive. Mm-hmm. It's okay. 10, 15 minutes to listen to the Modern Yogi podcast. I don't know how I just put that in there.
No, but anyways. It's true though. And I think it's, even if it's a short deviation, you can always turn back to Krishna. And also, I don't want people who have had longer deviations to know that they can't go back to Krishna too.
Long deviations are totally fine.
Long deviations are okay too, because everything we try to stress in this podcast is like every day is a new day. Even if you've had a longer deviation, you haven't talked to Krishna, you haven't offered anything, you haven't even spoke to him in years, that's okay, you know?
We all know someone, at least one person, who went wild in their whole like teenagehood,
even
college life. No, I know many someones, okay, calm down. No, I'm just saying, like, I think anyone can think of like people who just, or maybe had a really difficult time and struggled a lot and went through difficult things and they didn't want anything to do with Krishna, whatever it might be, whatever the deviation is, it doesn't matter. We look back, like when I meet anyone, I'm just so happy to know that we're in the same place and we just want to keep moving forward. And even if there's setbacks, it's fine. Like there's no judgment from any of us at any time. Yeah. If you're struggling, reach out. We are happy to send you a quick message. Shamali's really good at it. Shama Sangeeta is really good at it. And Ella is super awesome about it too.
She's pretty great.
They'll send you voice messages and everything. They're just amazing. So anyways, deviations are a natural part of karma.
Mm.
Yeah. They're a natural part of just our existence. And all we're trying to do is say, okay, let me get back on the highway and let's go back to Krishna.
Yeah. And speaking, and speaking of being supportive of each other during this, right?
Yeah.
I think this analogy of this group chat, I think it can be also in the DMs for Modern Yogi Podcast. If there are times where you're having struggle or you're having deviations, shoot us a message. And I think we've all been there. We'll respond. We get a lot of DMs actually, and I'm really grateful for that. Mm-hmm. But I think that just know you're not alone in this. And even the three of us have had deviations of different variations. And so just know that you're not alone in this. It's just part of karma, right?
Right. Yeah. And I will even take it further to say, because Priya, you were bringing up deviations, and it flashed in my head different scenarios of people you see who've kind of taken a detour and come back. And I will say, I think when they come back, it's with an even deeper urgency than maybe someone who never took a deviation.
Yes. Yeah.
Someone who, and you have it all. You have someone who never took a deviation and they're total pure devotee. Wonderful for them. But you have some who have never deviated, have always been going like slow and steady and comfortable and always Krishna conscious and lovely. And but someone who might take a deviation, then come back and feel like, oh my God, I wasted so much time. What happened? And they'll approach it with such an intensity and urgency that it's like, whoa, you're making up for so much time, maybe more so than people who have never deviated.
And just because those people are super fired up doesn't mean you have to be super fired up. Everyone has a different, like a different roadmap. Oh, okay.
Totally.
Got a different vibe.
I was roadmap.
Oh yeah. Romance. Skip.
Okay.
Sorry, I was talking to your millennial or Gen Z sister, and that's the word that's in my head right now.
Yeah, so I think everyone has their own different roadmap, and we really should not compare ourselves. We should just inspire each other.
Oh, yeah. And many people I've talked to also, like, recently, this past week, I've spoken to people who are older and might feel like, is there still a chance for me to achieve Krishna if I'm older in life and just now approaching Krishna consciousness? Absolutely. There's so many pure, pure devotees that didn't come into Krishna consciousness till their older, later years in life. And was it, I'm forgetting exactly whose, but I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songbook, don't quote me, but he's a great, I think it was him, but he's essentially talking about, because he came in later in life, I think it was him, but I'm blanking now, but basically one of the great saints in our lineage, there's a whole pouring out poem of his heart about, I wish I would have come to this sooner. What have I done with my life? And he was approaching with such an earnesty that very few reach in their lifetime.
Yeah. And my mom says that too. She's like, I wish I knew about Krishna consciousness earlier in my life. I would have changed so many things. And I was like, Mom, at least you know now, you know, at least you know now. And I hope that you feel that urgency. And she's like, I do. I really do.
And it's also amazing that she found Krishna consciousness like before you were like too grown and out of the house. So then you got a little bit of that too with her, right?
Yeah, I got that mercy. So, it's really sweet.
She did a great service.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, any final thoughts on these very important, four important verses of the Bhagavad Gita?
I just want to say that, you know, we're talking about deviations and all of that. And the biggest ways, there's tons of types of deviations, like whether it's like ones created by ourselves, but it's also about association.
Right.
So just, it's just one of the things that it says here is just association makes a difference.
Stay in the group chat. Don't leave the group chat. The group chat is community. And so it's so vital to be enthusiastic and stay friends with people in this community because that sustains you.
Yeah. I feel like people are going to think we actually have a WhatsApp group chat.
I mean, it's in our DMs at Modern Yogi Podcast.
Literally. Good plug. I love that. And it's just, to me, it really highlights, I was looking over the whole purport and I highlighted a bunch of sections that basically point towards the same thing. And it's that we need Krishna's grace to understand him.
Mm.
Because it says man can go on speculating for several millions of years. And if he's not devoted, if he's not a lover of the supreme truth, he will never understand Krishna or the supreme truth. It's only by devotion and by love that Krishna will show us the way to understand him.
Mic drop. Boom. By love.
Woo! By love. All you need is love.
Anything else, ladies, before we wrap up the episode?
I think that's it, guys.
All right. So tune in next time. We will be on chapter 10, text number 12. Thanks for listening, everybody.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.